The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
And just to mention the format, it's the usual format, which is an introduction and then the actual guided meditation and then some comments, questions and complaints. So there we are. So very good. Very nice to be here. We've started the Vassa, the rains retreat in Newbury. Began on the 2nd of August. That was the beginning of the rains retreat this year, a bit later than usual. And so this is a special time for meditation, not only for the monks and nuns, but also for the lay community. Some people make this as a time for their special time for their practice. And I heard Ajahn Sadaro emphasized making determinations for the rains retreat in his last talk. So that's quite a nice idea. So very good to encourage our practice. So that's very good. So this evening I was going to teach a scanning meditation, using scanning meditation. This is a very intriguing title, to see the mind and using metta. And I did this on Saturday afternoon. I think some of you here on Saturday afternoon, you might have heard it, but this will be slightly different from the Saturday one, because the scanning meditation, most people have heard of the scanning meditation, often called sweeping. And of course, who is associated with it most of all probably is Goenka. And I think some of you have probably done Goenka retreats. I have done a Goenka, a 10-day retreat in Sri Lanka as a monk. And also one of my teachers, Ayakema, she used to teach scanning meditation. Slightly different probably from Goenka, but similar. And of course, focusing on the bodily sensations and feelings. So this will be a little bit different, because we'll use metta with the scanning meditation, when we scan the body from the top of the head to the tips of the toes with metta. And this will be the focus for today, because most people have heard of the sensations and the using sensations for the focus, but this is another use of it, and it's to develop mindfulness in the present moment. And usually, as I said, it's the sensations or feelings, importantly, here and now. But this evening will be using mindfulness of metta. Very interesting, in the Metta Sutta, the Buddha mentions metta is a mindfulness. It's like a recollection, something we keep in mind. Too often we think of mindfulness just simply as being the present moment, but it's that attention, sustaining that attention on an object in the present moment. For Goenka, it's the sensations, but in this evening it'll be metta to the body. So this is another focus for it. And of course, it brings up, of course, with Goenka is mainly focused on insight, though I know some of the meditators who do these 10-day retreats get very deeply calm. And so it's really the nature of the human mind to have these aspects of calmness and insight. Both of them are quite natural. And of course, you know, you do hear of some meditators even getting jhanas during one of these Vipassana retreats. So, but I remember, as I mentioned on Saturday, one of the monks I knew in Sri Lanka, many years ago it was, we were talking about the Goenka scanning technique. And he said, it's amazing. He said, I do one or two scans and then I can see the mind. So it's changing the object of the meditation to the mind from the sensations of the body. And at that time, I thought, oh, that's really interesting and very interesting, because it sounded like it was taking the mind towards what we call cittanupassana, being aware of the mind. And this is when he mentioned seeing the mind, this is what it's about. It's just seeing, not so much focusing on the content of the mind, but focusing on the mind as a container for that content. Not being interested, not being so focused on what we're experiencing in terms of bodily sensations or mental experiences, and also like thinking and emotions, all those things. But rather, when this happens, that we see the mind, it's like the mind changing gear. It has a spaciousness in it. And these things are part of the mind, yes, but they are not overwhelming. For most of us, the mental content fills the whole mind, doesn't it? We have emotions, when we have thoughts, when we're experiencing things through the senses, whatever it is, it becomes totally the experience in the mind. But this experience is when the mind changes gear, as I say, and the peace becomes a sign of it is peacefulness and spaciousness, like the mind is so much bigger than the content of the mind. So this is quite special. It may happen during this meditation, may not. We just see. But if it does happen while we're doing the scanning with metta and the mind, you feel it going deeper and you feel it becoming more peaceful, more calm, more spacious. And then you can let go of focusing on the metta to the body and just be aware of that experience. Make that the object of meditation. And seeing all these things, it can be a very give rise to insight, because you're seeing all these content of the mind just passing through like so much weather. And so this can be something that gives rise to insight into the nature of experience of life, that these things are ever-changing, impermanent. They're not really, not something that we, because they're impermanent, we can't find permanent satisfaction or happiness with these states of mind that come and go. And there's always been a process, it's arising due to causes and conditions. So see, these are some of the things we can see when we, if the mind changes gear and goes to this peacefulness and spaciousness. So where we're not looking so much at the content, where we're looking at the actual experience of the mind just being spacious, and whatever is occurring in it is just occurring in it. And it's quite a peaceful experience when this happens. So this is something that can be very, very useful for the meditation. So that was the focus that I'd like to encourage for this evening while we're doing the scanning with metta. And so just see how it works. Try it. You may be surprised. I find it very effective, actually. I find it very effective. I think maybe you do too. It's always useful to have an array or a selection of different techniques, different approaches, different meditations. And you see that the Buddha taught, you know, for instance, when he taught his son Rahula meditation, he gave about half a dozen different types of meditation. And this idea of just one meditation technique is a relatively new idea, you know, with Mahasi, whether it be Goenka, there's probably lots of others too. Some may even say Ajahn Brahm. Possibly. He's a little bit more open than that, so you know, that's one of the things that always impressed me as with him, you know, is that as a teacher, he never says it's my way or the highway, just do my technique or you might as well forget about it. He never says that. And that actually encourages me, because that's got the openness to and the recognition that we're all different and we may need different approaches. And certainly all of us need to experiment and see what works for our minds at a particular given time. So this is something we can develop, this, as I say, this changing gear, the mind becoming spaciousness. And it reminds me of Ajahn Chah's emphasis of watching the mind, you know, and seeing that these things, these phenomena, the thinking, the thoughts, the sensory experiences that register in the mind are just passing through. They're not I, they're not an I and me or myself. And I like his simile too. The mind is like the grand central station. Everything's going through it. And that's a very good simile, isn't it? So that's the focus for this evening. And I'd just like to mention that you don't have to, with a scanning technique, one of the downsides of it is that people worry about the order you do. Am I getting it right? Did I do the right arm or should I do the left arm? Doesn't matter, as long as we move from the top of the head to the feet in some sort of a approach, and then some sort of order, and then from the feet back up to the head. And that's how we do the scan. If we get carried away with wondering if I'm doing this right, you know, I'm doing the left arm instead of the right arm or whatever, it creates doubt in the mind, and that's a hindrance. And so, and as I said on Saturday, there's nothing magic about the order of the scan. The important thing is the mind, really, how it's affecting the mind. So that's it. And if we get lost during the meditation, you know, during the scanning, we can always go back to the head or the feet, doesn't matter. And there's no need to dwell on any one particular spot. In fact, you know, usually Goenka and Aikima too was emphasizing just to keep the attention moving through the body while you're scanning. And so that's, and of course the speed, I will guide it to begin with, and then I'll leave it to you to take over. I'll go from the head to the toes and then back from the toes to the head a bit faster. But you can go at the speed that you find natural for you. If you go too slow, the focus tends to diminish, lose focus, and then the mind wanders off. And if you go too fast, the mind's a bit restless and revved up. So that's not much use either. But as I say, if the mind becomes very peaceful and spacious and you can feel a change in the mind, then that can be the object for your meditation. Just that peacefulness, that spaciousness. And in that spaciousness, actually, things, you know, like sometimes I notice from my own experience, the breath comes up. And it can be very obvious, you know, so in the mind. So this is what we can do during this meditation using metta. And of course, I think most of you are very aware of metta, this feeling of kindness, of friendliness, of warmth, of acceptance, all these things. So it's a warm emotion, and it's what every human being, every being is really looking for in life. Sometimes we're looking for it in another person, and of course that can be fraught with difficulties and frustrations. But of course, if we look within, this is where we can find that true love that we're looking for. It's always in here. And actually, once we connect with it, then others are attracted by it too. So this metta, this friendliness, this kindness is very important, and it's a quality, a universal quality. We develop it for all beings, not just specific beings, because when we do it with specific beings, usually they're the ones we like. It's a lot of attachment, really. And the important thing with metta is the feeling. This is absolutely the bottom line, is the feeling. So whatever approach we use, and I'll mention this in a minute, it's the feeling of well-wishing, of kindness, of caring, of goodwill, of appreciation, you know, and ease, safety and security, all these sorts of things, very warm emotions, and they're very natural to all beings. The Buddha didn't create it. The label metta or maitri, he did create, so that's something. But he used it as a vehicle for liberation even. We think of metta as being warm and cuddly, but it can be an incredible power that is a oneness of perception when the whole mind is filled with metta. And this is Chaito Vimutti, when the release of the mind, or the liberation of the mind through metta, just oneness of this feeling, this emotion. So So it's a very powerful one. And for me, metta is all about being on good terms with ourselves and others. This is very important. Something that we are quite often lacking in. And so this is something we can encourage, because we have to live with ourselves. And if we have to live with ourselves, we have to be able to accept ourselves as we are and like ourselves as we are, realizing we are works in progress. Things can change, but often we have a very idealized view of what we want ourselves to be like, and therefore we can't accept who we are, how we are at this time. So it's very important to be on good terms. And I always mention, when I lived in a cave for 8 years, that was very important. I was living on my own in the forest, so it's very important to be on good terms with yourself. And as I often say, I wasn't lonely. And it's because when we have a metta, or we develop metta or maitri, we can feel close to people who are not with us. And conversely, sometimes we're physically close to people, but they're far away in our minds, you know, in our hearts. We're not, we haven't got metta there for them. We may be taking them for granted. So this is the importance of metta. I think everybody knows quite a bit about metta. The Buddha emphasized metta is something we should develop by body, speech and mind, not just meditation, not just on the cushion, but the way we speak to others, the way we speak to ourselves. Sometimes the most unkind speech is to ourselves. So this is very important, and our actions too. And this is where we can develop metta or maitri in daily life, just through cultivating, deliberately cultivating kindness in our speech, in our actions. And certainly through our minds, because our minds are the drivers for our actions and speech. So this is important. And he also emphasized, it's not only in public. When we're with people, we're kind, very nice, all that sort of thing. But when we're on our own too, when we're in private, when we're thinking about other people, being kind in our minds. So this is important. And as I mentioned, lots of different ways people can develop this feeling of kindness, friendliness, caring. And of course, words are the most well-known approach, aren't they? So we have things like, may you be happy and well, may you be free of suffering, or may I be happy and well, may I be free of suffering. And that's fine, as long as it brings up the feeling. But as I mentioned on Saturday, if we repeat words often enough, the feeling goes. So we have to change the words to bring up the feeling. If you use words, these are only signposts. They're not absolutes that we have to do. And sometimes Ayakema, she was very good at loving kindness or metta, maitri, and she would use images. And I mentioned, you know, flower garden in the heart, beautiful flowers, beautiful colors, scents, and then picking them and giving them to oneself and then to others, these bunches of these beautiful flowers, and then to all beings. And she used other things like images of the sun or the moon in the heart, filling the body and the mind with light and warmth of kindness, loving kindness, and then radiating. She was great at doing these visualizations. She was really impressive. And of course, the other aspect is concept. So, you know, a concept I like is a best friend, you know, being a best friend to ourselves and to others. And a mother's love for only child, very common one that the Buddha taught. It's in the Metta Sutta. But in that case, we see ourselves as our own child, and then we see all other beings as our child. And that's very different from mostly for mothers, their children, yes, neighbours' children, well, not quite the same things. And Ajahn Brahm, opening the door of your heart, that's I quite like that too as an image, you know, as a concept that for developing a metta or maitri for myself and for others. And it's always focusing on the good qualities of ourselves and others. This is what metta is about. Our usual habits, fault finding, about ourselves and about others. So this is the usual thing, but we're looking just at the good qualities. And this is important as an antidote. And sometimes I mentioned on Saturday too, you can develop metta in two modes, from the negative to the positive, or you can just start from the positive. So in other words, you're wishing yourself and others to be free of difficulties of body and mind, you know, free of difficult mind states like anxiety, fear, worry, anger, depression, all these things. And that sometimes can be easier for developing metta if the mind is in a bit more of a negative space. And then one can at other times too, wishing the positive side of it, the positive aspects like happiness, contentment, warmth, acceptance, friendliness, and well-being. So that these two modes, I think it's good to have that in mind, because when some days if the mind's a bit grungy, you know, and grumpy, starting with, oh, I wish all beings contentment, happiness, safety, friendliness, doesn't work because the mind's not in that stage. But wishing all beings to be free ourselves and all beings to be free of these negative mind states, anxiety, anger, worry, fear, all these things can be an approach that will work for developing metta. So this is another way of developing metta. And as I mentioned on my favourite saying connected with metta, and I think it's very good, from Gaur Gopal Das, some of you may know of him, he's on the YouTube, who isn't? And he's a Hindu ascetic, you know, I think, I can't remember what Krishna, probably to do with Krishna, I think he's very good, I think he's got some very good points to make. And he says, if we want to be loved, we may not be. But if we want to give love, who can stop us? Isn't that beautiful? I think that's great. That's really good. So many people are waiting to be loved, and they may wait forever. But if they develop that love within their own hearts, then, you know, they have what they're looking for. And then, you know, the external love, the connection with other people can happen much, much easier. So that's the introduction, rather long, for the scanning of the body with metta. So now we can start with first of all finding a comfortable position. Maybe do you want to do a bit of stretching? Just a little stretch. I think we're okay, actually. So, we can, nice, close the eyes, come into the present moment, like we're coming inside our homes, and it's cozy and warm, and there is nothing we need to do for now, and nowhere we need to go. Just here, at home with ourselves. And we can feel if the body needs any adjustments to make it comfortable. Have a sense of balance in the body, the head over the shoulders, and the shoulders over the hips. And the hands comfortable, either on the lap or the knees or however, and the legs and the feet too. Just being here now. And in order to bring up the feeling of metta, we can use remembering someone that has been very kind to us, been caring for us, looked out for us at some stage in our lives. Someone that we felt the warmth of their kindness, their concern, their acceptance and understanding. Someone that we feel safe at home with, a connection. It may be grandparent, a relative, an auntie, an uncle, mum and dad even, or a friend. It may be during a difficult time in our lives, when we really appreciated their kindness, we really felt it, that caring and kindness. And if we can't think of someone, we can just think of the qualities of a kind and caring person. And we can get in touch with this feeling that comes up, hopefully comes up, when we remember a kind and caring person. And usually it brings up a sense of warmth, a sense of thanks too, gratitude. But it also brings up that sort of feeling of kindness in us too. A sense of being accepted and being accepting. And we can start the scan by bringing to mind the top of the head, back of the head, and sides of the head, and giving this warm feeling of caring and kindness, acceptance and understanding to that area of the head, those areas of the head. And bringing to mind the forehead and the face, all around the eyes and the mouth and the chin, giving this caring, kind, gentle, warm feeling to those areas of the body, of the face. And moving our attention to the neck, all around the neck, with this warm, accepting, open feeling of metta, of that kind and caring person. Bringing to mind the right shoulder, starting at the neck and moving our attention along the right shoulder with this caring kindness, warmth. Now bringing to mind the right arm, starting at the top of the right arm and moving our attention down the right arm, all around it, to the hand and fingers, with this warm, accepting, kind feeling of metta. Scanning the right arm, hand and fingers. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder, starting at the neck and moving our attention, scanning it along left shoulder with this warm, kind, gentle feeling of metta, going from one area to the next area to the next area, scanning. And now bringing to mind the left arm, starting at the top of the left arm and moving the attention, scanning down the left arm, all around it, right down to the hand and fingers, with this warm feeling of metta, of a caring and kind person, giving it to area after area as we scan. Now bringing to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and scanning down the back. This warm metta, this healing metta, relaxing metta, area after area, right down the back. Now we can bring to mind the front of the body, starting just below the shoulders, and scan down the front of the body with this warm, caring feeling of metta to each area that we scan. Now bringing to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and scanning down the right leg with this kind, caring, warm, relaxing metta. At ease with whatever we experience as we scan down the left, the right leg to the right foot and to the tips of the toes. And now we can bring to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and scanning down the left leg all around it, right down to the foot and toes, with this warm, open, accepting feeling of metta. And now we can reverse the scan, starting with the tips of the toes of the left foot and moving up the left leg, scanning it with this kindness, caring, gentleness of metta. And now we can bring to mind the right leg, starting with the tips of the toes of the right foot and moving up the right leg with this all-embracing metta, caring and kind. Now we can bring to mind the front of the body and scan up the front of the body. This warm, kind feeling of metta. Scanning area after area. And now we can bring to mind the back, starting at the bottom and moving up the back, scanning area after area with this kindness, this warmth, this sense of ease and relaxation. Now you can bring to mind the left arm, starting at the tips of the fingers and moving up the left arm with this caring, kind feeling of metta. Area after area, scanning it, bathing it in this feeling. Right up to the shoulder. And then along the shoulder to the neck. And now we can bring to mind the right arm, starting with the tips of the fingers and moving the scan up the right arm with this warm, open, caring feeling of metta, area after area of the right hand, right arm, right up to the right shoulder and along the right shoulder. Now bringing to mind the neck and scanning all around the neck, up the neck, this warm feeling of metta, area after area. And then moving the attention to the chin and moving up the face, around the mouth and the eyes and forehead. Scanning with this relaxing, caring feeling. And we can move the attention to the top of the head, the back of the head, and sides of the head. With bathing these areas as we scan with this warm energy of caring. A kind friend. And now we can reverse the scan and go at our own pace. Not too slow, not too fast. However feels natural for you. No need to stop to dwell on any spots. And if we get lost, if we lose our place, we can always start again at the head or the feet. And if we feel the mind changing gear, opening to the spaciousness, to a sense of peace, sometimes it's joy, we can change the let go of the scanning and go to that experience of the mind. As we scan down to the toes, and then when we finish there, we can scan back up. Just going at a comfortable pace. And if the feeling of kindness or caring diminishes, we can just remember what brought that up, what brought that feeling, that person that brought up that feeling of kindness, caring, of thanks. And now, as we're coming close to the end of the meditation, we can come back to ourselves and recollect what qualities we experienced during the meditation. Maybe this kindness, this caring, this warmth, maybe this peace and spaciousness, or some insight into the mind. And we can share whatever came up for us in this meditation with everyone here this evening, everyone listening online this evening, sharing and wishing for their well-being, happiness, and peace. And we can expand this feeling around wherever we are and keep expanding and sharing it with all beings, human beings, animals, insects, unseen beings, whatever beings. And we can just keep expanding it to cover the whole of this earth and all realms of existence, sharing these qualities we've experienced and wishing for their well-being, happiness and peace. And now we can come back to ourselves and just reflect for a few moments on how we feel. Do we feel differently from when we began the meditation? And what qualities or feelings came up for us? What experiences did we have during the meditation? Was there more kindness, more caring, more warmth, peace, or spaciousness? And we can reflect what caused these qualities, these experiences to come up in our meditation. Was it a me? Was it because of myself? Or was it because of causes and conditions? And we can develop the intention to develop more or to use more of this scanning with metta, to make more of these qualities of the heart and also of wisdom, in our lives to share not only with ourselves, with others. Centering ourselves, earthing ourselves with the scanning, with metta, and sharing it. And we can anchor these experiences of the meditation, these qualities that we've experienced in the heart, to be experienced, to be remembered whenever we turn the mind to them. And now I will ring the bell 3 times and you're welcome to come out of meditation on the 3rd ring. If you wish to stay in meditation, no problem. And we can, for those who wish to, can move the body and open the eyes. Here we are. So very good. And now it's nearly just after 22. So I think Ajahn Prasada and Deepa are going to the airport now. So wish you well for your time in Malaysia and heading for Sri Lanka for the second Vassa, for the second rains retreat. Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Relax you, hopefully, and may it all go well. All right. Deepa? Ah, maybe he's gone outside. I saw someone go outside, actually. So hopefully that's deeper. If it isn't, please come back. We'll see what we can do. So now it's time for comments, questions or complaints. I do recall one time somebody said after a guided metta meditation, he said he felt angry, or not angry, irritated and annoyed. I said, wow. And eventually we found out it was because he's used to silent meditation, so he didn't like speaking. So it was good. But it didn't work for him, that's for sure. But whenever we do experience these negative states of mind, it's good to just reflect how it feels. And of course they never feel pleasant, never feel, are they for my well-being, for my happiness? No. That makes it easier for us to let go of them, to be kind to ourselves. And always with these negative emotions, it's very good to have a kind feeling to it, because a natural feeling to have with negative emotions is get out of here. This is rejection. And it's just adding to the negativity we're already experiencing in the mind. So just having kindness and acceptance, let it be, and then it'll go by itself. So, are there any comments, questions or complaints here? I wonder if that gentleman was here tonight. No.
Ajahn, we have a couple of online questions. I'll just start with someone just wrote, no complaints.
No complaint. Wow, that worked for you then. That's good.
But there do we have a couple of questions.
Yes, good.
And the first one is, aging has seen this body become exceptionally tight and stiff a lot, and it unsettles the mind. Sitting meditation makes it worse and laying down better, however, the drowsiness comes.
Yeah.
It continues, but I'm not sure if that's quite the question, but the same person writes, so please advise how to really not identify with the body and thoughts that are all me and mine, and the flashbacks of youth. The mind likes to show when the body recovered fast and was younger.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, I think that's a very good point. As we age, as a body ages, or have serious sicknesses, chronic illnesses, whatever it is, if we identify with the body as being me or mine or myself, then that does make it even tougher because we're taking it very, very personally. But if we see this body as, you know, something that is a process, is a part of nature, it's a vehicle for us for sure, and it's also a vehicle for learning. And of course, what it is teaching us, what life is teaching us, is you never get it quite the way you want it to be. Or if you do, it's only for a short period. So it's teaching us about dukkha. It's teaching us about suffering. It's teaching us a noble truth, which will motivate us and hopefully give rise to the understanding that it's not within my control to make the body as I would like it to be, pleasant, have only pleasant feeling, you know, youthful and flexible is nice. I know I can relate to all the things that person said. I thought, yeah, this is true. I say to people, old age, aging is not a picnic, but it is a good source of wisdom. It can be a good source of wisdom. And to be incredibly kind with this body, with these experiences we have of body and mind. You know, and the Lord Buddha, he was saying, even though he was talking to Nakalapita, this old lay disciple of the Buddha, and he was really old, and you know, the body was giving him a lot of grief. It was getting very difficult, and he said, even though your body may be sick, may be old, there's barely a moment that it's free of some unpleasant feeling. Do not allow your mind to be unwell, to be sick like the body. And that's not easy. And the Buddha didn't actually explain it to him how this is possible. But then he was very delighted, Nakalapita, and he was very inspired. And then he met Venerable Sariputta, and he told him what the Buddha said. And he said, did you ask the Buddha what that meant? How do we make the mind? How do we avoid the mind getting sick too when the body gets sick? Most people's minds get sick when the body gets sick, and that's quite natural actually. But it need not be the case. And then Venerable Sariputta taught him about non-self, how to develop non-self, not identifying with this body as me, as mine, as myself, realizing it belongs to nature. It's not something I can control. I can influence it, and we can all influence it, but we cannot, you know, stop the body from progressing, as all bodies will do, due to impermanence. And it's a teaching in that impermanence. And when we can bring up this feeling of non-self, of it being a process, of us being observing it, of being kind to it and learning from it, turning this experience of aging into our practice. And this can be very powerful for us, because as we age, you know, and we have these various sicknesses, it's like the practice is right in our faces. We have to. Dukkha is a great motivator for really finding a way of dealing with it in a good way. And mostly with these experiences, and I'm sure this person is experiencing this, we're rejecting it. We don't want this. Who wants to have a lot of unpleasant feeling? Who wants to have pain in the body? But as the Buddha's mentioned, we don't have to have pain in the mind. If we can have kindness towards what we're experiencing, metta towards what we're experiencing, it will make it much more bearable. And also, I think, you know, I find as I age, a sense of humour comes over me when I see the things I can't do now. I think, laugh, you know, I think, you know, gee, the body can't do this and, you know, and that. To have that sense of humour, that sense of perspective is very, very helpful too. But to learn, you know, this is our main purpose in life, is to really learn from experience, learn. And we all will learn the same things. It's the same lessons for everyone, which is always anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, nothing lasts in this body, in this mind, always changing, always transitory, always moving on, and not when we want it to. It just can sometimes be just at the most inconvenient time. that we have problems with the body. And I'm sure this person has experienced that too. You know, as you get older, you know, the toilet stops become more frequent and all this sort of thing. There are a lot of things that we can learn from. But that is learning from impermanence and learning the unsatisfactoriness of it. And of course that is one of the aspects of that is pain, the painful feelings. That is a big part of dukkha. But also the suffering of change, and this person is getting it, we're all getting it, whether it's the suffering of old age, whether it's suffering of getting sick, whether it's the suffering of things changing. This is another aspect of dukkha, things changing. And certainly seeing ourselves aging, this is a big, big lesson. And seeing in this whole experience, the non-self, the fact that the body has its own nature, it will go its own way, and just to be kind. And they always say, don't they, age gracefully. In actual fact, we don't have much choice. we either react in a very negative way and therefore experience very unpleasant mind states as well as bodily states. But we have this sense of kindness, of metta, and sense of humour too, laugh about it in our own minds, take it lightly, then, you know, this experience of ageing, the difficulties that come with it, is much easier to bear. But, of course, the Buddha was emphasising this, our focus should be for ending repeating this experience again and again and again and again. In other words, ending rebirth. And that will come when we have the wisdom, when we have the understanding of impermanence, when we have the understanding of unsatisfactoriness or suffering and non-self. This body and mind are not under my control. Often people think they are, but who would wish an aging, a sick body on themselves? If it were themselves. And at the same time, you know, I often say to people, this body, who's pumping the blood around and the hormones and this and that? We aren't. And it's a part of nature. It's an organism. And the mind is similar too. If people were really the owners of their mind, they could think and feel what they wished. Who would want to be depressed, angry, anxious, fearful? All these negative states, nobody in their right mind. But it points to the fact that this is non-self, that is a process. And this is one of the things the Buddha emphasized, the fact that we can't control it. And a lovely talk that I heard from Ajahn Brahm, quite an old talk really, where he said, we're not the owners of this body and mind. And that's a really lovely teaching. And that we're only the visitors. We've developed the perception of being a visitor to this body, to this mind. And that way we can live more comfortably. We can live in tune with the nature of reality, which is always going to be like that. Always going to be impermanent, unsatisfactory. Because of impermanence, not possible to get full satisfaction, full happiness, permanent happiness. It will always change. And also this sense of self that we grasp at and try to identify with this and that, with this body, with our relationships, what we own and all this sort of thing. No, this is part of non-self too. This is a part of a process. It's moving through. Because if there were a permanent self, there wouldn't be impermanence, would there? We'd have this. And also we'd be stuck. There'd be no possibility for change, actually. Non-self, this fact that it is a process, allows for an Angulimala, a serial killer, becoming an arahant. Otherwise, you know, if we were permanently like this, whatever this is, we'd be stuck with it. There couldn't be change, but there can be change. And this is what meeting a Buddha for Angulimala did, you know, just change the direction of his life because of this process of non-self. It's possible to do that. Ah, so thank you for that question. I hope that's sort of answered. But always metta and this sense of humour is not bad. See you then. Yeah.
Are there any questions in the hall?
Any questions? Oh, yes. Yeah, good.
Ajahn, I just want to say thank you so much. You know, you speak about metta and now visualizing someone, but you're right here in front of us and your wisdom's just so amazing.
All right.
So, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I just want to ask about your take on spaciousness, because we see spaciousness as the external, like how much space we got.
Yeah.
I hear you just so wisely articulated about spaciousness in the guided meditation. And also your stay in the cave, so that wouldn't have been external spaciousness.
Yeah.
So can you talk into that, please?
Yes, about spaciousness, yes. I mean, spaciousness is something, you know, I think every so often, when I taught this on Saturday morning, I taught a panorama, developing a panorama insight before I did the scanning for the sensations and feelings. And I think whenever we see a panorama, I mean, sometimes it can be really breathtaking. You know, you're on a side of on top of a hill. I remember once being on Listerfield Park, there's a hill there and you've got a really great view all around. And it has an impact on the mind. What spaciousness does, it really opens the mind up, because the mind has that potential to be absolutely limitless, you know, unbounded. And this is what the Buddha is pointing to when we make the metta just the one perception in the whole of the mind, the whole of the universe, everywhere. And so this spaciousness, physical spaciousness, can bring that mental spaciousness, as I say, whether it's a hill, being at the ocean, looking at the horizon, on a big building sometimes, on top of a building, you can get really good view. And it can have a real impact on the mind, and because the mind recognizes that spaciousness and it takes us out of our narrow confines that we often live in. And if you have a lot of problems, a lot of difficulties going on, just going to a place like that, wow, it just opens out. And those problems tend to, you know, seem quite small, really, just in that huge spaciousness. And so that's the physical spaciousness. But when we are doing this scanning, as I was mentioning, we can get this feeling of spaciousness, that there is so much more room in the mind. And then everything that's occurring in the mind is just part of it, not the full mind, not taking up the whole bandwidth, as they say these days when they talk about internet. So it's something, this spaciousness. Often we don't pay attention to it, but it's a quality that opens the mind, and the mind feels like can feel unlimited, and especially as the mind settles down. And then with this spaciousness, this becomes a singleness of perception. So it can become infinite too. And of course, with the first immaterial attainment, the boundless, ayatana, the boundless experience of space, then the boundless experience of consciousness, then the boundless experience of nothingness, and then the last of the material attainments, neither perception nor non-perception, when it's turning off and on. So this is something that can take the mind to real oneness, actually. When it's vast, it's just, and it can be just one. And so this is where the samadhi, the power of the mind, can really develop. And then it's a single perception of this spaciousness. But it's a very useful one. And as I say, you know, whatever problems we have in life, if we have this vastness that it's in the middle of, it loses a lot of its power. It's when, because the trouble is often we're so close up to whatever problems, difficulties we have, and they're right in our face, as it were. You can't see any further than them. But when we have the spaciousness, they become just part of it, and it's much easier to deal with those problems and difficulties in the midst of that spaciousness. And it's possible within our minds, within our hearts, to have that. And it's very liberating and very relaxing and peaceful, this space. And I think everybody here has probably experienced panoramas and you go, wow. And that's a very useful perception, actually. So I'd like to thank you for that question, and I think we can end the evening there because it's now 9 o'clock and time to wind up. But for those who wish to, we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha.